This week on the podcast, we're joined by Ben Yanes. Ben is a New York-based strength and conditioning coach and personal trainer. We talk about how he got into coaching, his love of biomechanics, some of the biggest lies the fitness industry propagates, and also why he thinks that people spend way too much time stretching before they work out. Enjoy the episode. We're live. We're back in the podcast. We are here at Mr. Ben Yanes, of a Sunday at the time of recording as well. So the Lord's Day, we've taken some time out to chat all things kind of training, Ben's enemies in the fitness world as well, which we'll touch on as we go. But thanks for coming on the podcast and a big welcome to Mr. Ben. How are you?
James, thanks for having me, man. Appreciate you taking the time out of your Sunday. I know, like you said, you don't normally do this, so I'll assume I'm an exception and you love me for it. So
of course,
yeah, thanks
of
for having
course.
Me on. Excited to chat today.
For those who aren't kind of well acquainted with who you are, Ben, how about a little introduction and maybe a little bit of an origin story as to how you became a kind of a coach and where it's taken you up until now?
Yeah, so technically speaking, I'm a personal trainer, although actually as of late, I am making my way away from that a bit just to move more into the education side of things. So I kind of look at myself as a bit of like a trainer's trainer, and I work in education of biomechanics, all things, you know, joint mechanics related, muscle mechanics related, basic physics stuff. That's kind of my shtick, at least at the moment. I got into personal training originally, though, and kind of working with people when I was in college. And I just started out by training athletes at my school. I just had an internship. And, you know, prior to that, it was basically just like the classic story of, you know, was an athlete growing up, so learned to lift somewhat through that. And then just kind of, you know, continued to dive more into that after I stopped playing sports. My dreams of becoming an NFL athlete died early on. So I had to have make a second plan. At one point, actually, I was debating on going to physical therapy school, but I was lucky enough to have people around me who, you know, had enough experience in the training realm just to kind of know where my interests actually were. And so, you know, I'm happy I never dove deeper into that. But where I did dive deeper into was just all the stuff related to, you know, the physics and the biomechanics stuff, which I'm sure we'll get into today. And, you know, it's kind of led me just more and more over time, not only to work with, you know, people from all different sorts of, you know, fields related to powerlifting, bodybuilding, general field sport, just consulting for people in, you know, like I said earlier, more over time, just moving more into this education realm, in addition to just like a little bit of personal training still in the background, just general population clients here in New York City. So, you know, I think it's always good to at some point still maintain a little bit of like, you know, just that dose of reality of just working with like normal people who are not, you know, super nerds. So I try to keep myself in check and in touch with that, at least, like I said, for the time being. So that's kind of the shtick on me. And yeah.
Keep the gen pop around for the time being. And then humility goes completely out the window once
correct.
It comes full on.
Correct. Which I'm sure it will soon.
Do you think most coaches kind of do need that? You know, it's a catch-all kind of question and maybe an answer too. But like, do you think most coaches do need a bit of that to kind of stay anchored where they're actually trying? Because I was actually talking to Pat Davidson. He was on the previous episode, and we were talking about how the industry is at the moment. What does he think of the industry going forward and stuff like that? And he was very vocal about working with people in person, because you get a lot of people now that are moving straight from some rickety little kind of PT qualification and then moving directly into, oh, I'm online coach extraordinaire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or not even that. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think I got lucky from the perspective of just where I landed when I, you know, was trying to land there, which was at Hype, and which was around, you know, Pat, who you just mentioned, you know, pretty early on. But I think a lot of people now, it's like there's never been a lower barrier. I mean, there is no barrier, you know, to entry in this industry now. And, you know, everyone can have an opinion and everyone can post something online, whether or not it's supported, you know, empirically. And, you know, I just think that over time, it's going to continue to shift more and more in that direction. I actually don't see things moving the other way at this point, wherein people are able to just kind of you know, either utilize how they look aesthetically or utilize the fact that maybe they've worked with a few gifted athletes to basically leverage themselves as clinicians, practitioners, or, you know, fitness professionals in the eyes of people who don't really necessarily know what to look for. So, you know, in the industry, and I've talked to people across a few different industries in relation to this topic specifically, which is just like not really having a qualification through experience, but being able to be a voice in a space. It's like a very unnatural, it's a very weird thing. And I think it used to probably be a different kind of problem, where like before, you know, before the social media times, which I'm, you know, I'm pretty young. So, you know, I never existed in that, like, you know, 1980s, 1970s era of fitness, where it was just like, you go up to the guy at your gym, you know, the biggest guy at your gym, and you ask him for advice. Like, I think that's probably equally as bad, just in a different way. But I think that regardless, it's like, there's always going to be some kind of a problem in this industry of, just trying to, you know, disseminate more and more information that is closer to the objective truth as opposed to the opposite. And, you know, for me at this point, I think it's really, really helpful to be able to train people in person to that, to get to the actual question, because so much of what we're able to learn is just at our fingertips, that it's like, well, you know, it's important to train people in person, I think, because you need to kind of be able to identify what portions of the information you're consuming are the ones that are actually useful, and what portions of the information you're consuming are just, you know, it's perfectly fine to just consume things that you like to consume, but it's a whole nother thing to, like, you know, have all these other more nuanced conversations that don't really have any relevance to application. So over time, I think I've gone from, you know, posting a lot of things on social media that I just thought were interesting, but not actually very helpful to people, to then, you know, training more and more people in person and kind of just parsing out, like, what portions of the information were actually important at their, in their application, and then just talking more about that stuff. And that's helped me tremendously from, you know, a growth standpoint, just in terms of a follower count and reach. So overall, I think it's, yes, it is important, but I don't see it changing from the perspective of moving in the direction of more people starting to train people in person. I think it's just going to continue in a direction that we have no idea, you know, or no ability to really predict at this point. So I would advise most people, though, to definitely, you know, continue their learning and their in-person application in tandem. I think those two things have to go together, as long as you're, you know, not hurting anyone.
Yeah, fair enough. Coaches coach education around other trainers, that seems to be a real kind of hot area now, and I think,
yeah,
I don't know, every second time I post, it'll be some sort of gaudy DM, hey man, how long are you coaching? And you're like, that's the one sentence, yeah, you shouldn't have started with. Now I'm just not even going to respond. What got you in, like, what was the kind of the thought process behind, okay, I've been a trainer for a while, I've done biomechanics certification, that's the area I want to go into. But yeah, now I want to start working with coaches. Do you think it's just more so like you learn so much and the Gen Pop only kind of really need the tip of the iceberg, where you can really sharpen your tools with coaches who are actually, well, you'd like to think are actually interested in learning this stuff?
Yeah, good question. So I technically started training people in person, I would say, however many years ago would be, I guess it would be technically four to five. And I was working with people, just, you know, basically coaching my friends, that whole business before then. But people will hear that response to that question and be like, oh my God, dude, you have to have a decade at least, you know, in the trenches, or you have to have, you know, you have to have some sort of like higher qualification to be able to actually talk about this stuff and coach this stuff in the first place. And I just think it's really ridiculous, because I think that, like, the amount of time that you spend training people in terms of the total amount of time for most personal trainers, like past a couple of years, really, I'm not going to say that those years just kind of repeat themselves, but for most people in my experience, in terms of the trainers that I've talked to, like actual trainers who have been working with people for a decade plus, you know, all of them kind of say a similar thing. Like, yeah, like I learned a lot of what I, you know, can apply now in the first couple of years. And then after that, it's basically just been like, hey, I've had the same client for 8 years. And, you know, he shows up every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 9 a.m. And we literally just talk about his kids. And that's kind of like what it ends up being. And that's, you know, it's a fantastic thing for people to be able to maintain those relationships. Like, that's what most people are looking for in a trainer coach or a trainer client relationship. But for me, it's kind of like, I think it's run its course. And kind of what you were saying about, you know, Gen Pop clientele sort of needing just the tip of the iceberg. I think that's 100% true. And I think the way, like the feeling that I would describe when I think of what personal training is to me now is it feels just more like I'm making friends, more so than anything else. And for me, from the standpoint of like intellectual curiosity, I don't feel very stimulated at this point, we'll say, which is not, a bad thing, but I just want to look for situations that are a little bit more challenging from the perspective of like where I'm at now. And I can give you an example of that where, a couple months ago, or more than a couple months ago, I started training alongside a pro bodybuilder, and he's also one of my good friends. He's another trainer at my gym, and working with him is just a completely different ball game. Where like there's a big difference between working with my 150, 160 pound client of 30 years of age who's healthy, has no joint problems, to then training with someone who's 280 pounds plus, who's been training for 2 decades, who needs things that are going to be much more specific in application to his particular goal. And along the way, there are so many different challenges that come up with that kind of situation that just aren't present in any other situation with any Gen Pop client that you'll run into, or at least a lot of them. So for me, it's just been about, finding these applications that are a little bit more difficult to parse through. And I get so much more out of that from like a reward perspective now, as compared to when I first started training, where, it was like coaching a squat for the first time was a really, really difficult thing. And it still can be for, different people and different trainers. And some clients are really stubborn, and when you get that new client, it's like it's that experience all over again. But for the most part, I haven't lost very many clients at this point. And so it's kind of just been like, chatting with people 3 times a week. So yeah, that's kind of the direction that made me want to, or the story about, why I think I wanted to move more towards teaching. Because, when you're teaching something for the first time, it's always this like game of knowing the objective information in your head, but being able to communicate it in a way that makes sense to, whoever you're talking to. And so whoever I'm talking to, it could be, if I'm doing like a seminar, it could be 30 different people, right? And 30 different interpretations of what I say. And that to me just never gets old. So it's just a personal preference thing. I don't mean for it to sound like it's a judgment on anyone, or it's me making a commentary about personal training. I love personal training, as it's what got me into this in the first place. So no shade there. I just, am kind of transitioning out of it at this point. It's sort of run its course for me.
I love that very political kind of off ramp to the end of that. I'm not talking shit about this. Look, I think I have to kind of agree. Look, I think people raise their eyebrows when you talk about, well, the trainer side of things, because I know it's deliver, deliver, deliver for the client you're working with, and most competent, caring coaches will look at it that way. But I mean, in terms of satisfaction, in terms of gratification, if you're going over the same platitudes and kind of that Gen Pop stuff can get very boring, especially if you're, I'll say the non-political way, because I know you're not going to. It can get boring after a while. How often can you, same conversations?
Intellectual stimulation is what we'll go
Exactly,
with.
exactly. It happens across every single sector. If you get bored, your tools become dull, and you start, I don't know, you start kind of resenting what you do for a living. So you're better off being
Yeah.
preemptive and making the moves
Yeah.
to kind of move away from that. To play devil's advocate a little bit, because I want to get into this kind of stretching
Let's
stuff
do
and
it. Yeah, let's fight.
the lies of fitness industry start to kind of propagate and stuff like that. But can you look back when you first started training? You're talking about teaching the squat and stuff like that. Did you do any stuff when you first started out that you kind of go, oh,
Oh
like
my.
that's cringe inducing?
Oh my God. Yeah. I
It
mean,
has to be a few.
I would say the main thing, like, and this can branch out into 30 different topics on its own, but like the main thing is just like this idea that people need you to be in their ear, through the entire session. And it's really cringy to observe when, at least now for me, when I'm around other trainers that are saying these kinds of things. But the way that I see most people cue a squat or teach a squat, in the way that I used to teach a squat, was like a lot of like verbal diarrhea to the client. And so it would be like, hey, I'm going to give you this weight, and you're going to hold this kettlebell in the goblet position. And then like, we're going to play around with where your feet are, and you're just going to do the squat. And then as you're going through the motion, I'll say different things like, oh, chest down or butt back or knees forward, or try to feel this particular part of your foot when you do this, or try to direct a particular segment of your body in a particular way. And I used to think that the more information that they had, the more ideas that were able to kind of like float through their conscious mind, like the better it would be, because then they would have more tools to be able to solve that problem. But what I realized is that a lot of times, none of that actually matters the most. What really matters the most is just where you kind of put the person from a physical standpoint. And when I say physical, I mean like physics-based, force-related standpoint. To succeed or not succeed, right? So I'll look back on, the squat that I was trying to teach person A, who had femurs that were twice as long relative to their spine as person B. And I didn't realize that like I was kind of just running myself into a wall trying to get this person to do a more, we'll say, vertical looking squat without just giving them a heel elevation, or without just giving them some sort of external reference to drive their knees toward, or so, just to give two examples. And so the more the longer that I've done this, the less I've actually talked throughout the sessions. Unless it was about something related to, like I said earlier, their, maybe their kids, or like maybe they had a tough day at work, or maybe, we're talking about food. So I would say that's the number one thing, is just the idea of giving more information as a way to better the session. I actually think most of the time it just comes down to like how you're able to set the person up for success from a physical perspective, and then just kind of not being too sort of micromanagey about how you actually coach the person throughout, the remainder of that session, and just during those exercises. Because I think people have this perception around me that like, because I talk about things that are like slightly more nuanced or seemingly pedantic, that I will like, be using words like abduction with a client, or using words like flexion and extension. And it's like, it couldn't be farther from the truth. Because it's kind of like, the more that the less that you actually of with that pool that you're applying in real time. And so over time, the more that I've been able to consume and understand, the less, or rather, the more simple the outcomes, not the more complex the outcomes.
It's funny they mention that, the kind of terminology stuff, that the more you know, the less you need to use to explain it. And I think it's, you see that in the gym floor a lot with people, where it's, you just need to externally rotate your knee a little bit, and the client's kind of like,
I'm like, don't fucking say that, man. Don't
a
say
what?
that to your client.
A what now? Stretching. That's because you talk about how you're perceived online, and that's an interesting one, because I like a little tinge of adversarial nature. I'm all for that.
Sure.
Kind of like, the stretching world, you must be like the anti-lobby for static stretching and that sort of stuff. To be honest, I used to be like, when I first started training, I used to be like, oh, I'd spend half an hour before I train treading the needle, external, internal rotation of the
Same.
hips, every different activation you think of. And I found myself spending 45, 50 minutes just warming up. And then by the time my working set start, I was goosed at that stage.
Yeah.
And I think in recent years, I've even as a kind of a thought experiment, I kind of said to myself, do you know what? It's funny enough, I'm gonna align myself with somebody, but only in a very small reference. So I have to preface that by saying it's only very small. I
Okay.
think Joel, and he's the worst guy in the world, I think, for some of the stuff he puts out. Joel Seedman.
Yeah.
I look, some of his stuff, I'll leave him to it, but he actually didn't warm up at all. I think it was like a whole mesocycle of training or something like that, which I thought was pretty badass. And he didn't get injured whatsoever, and I think some of his output actually improved. So I thought to myself, light bit of cardio, maybe just because I like it as a mental tick, and then I'll start my warm up sets. I'll just go straight into it. And since then, my training's kind of, I haven't got injured. And
Wild.
my training, yeah, it's a crazy concept, isn't it? So
Crazy.
can you? That's long winded, but can you speak to that a little bit? That kind of, when you first start looking at, okay, there's the evidence for stretching or static stretching at the very least before you train is scant, to say the least. And I need to put this out there. And then the adversarial nature of what you kind of get back online from the stretching crowd.
Yeah, so just a few general comments first. I think that most people understandably look at me as like the anti-stretching guy. And I just want everyone to know that I'm not anti-stretch. I'm putting
you in a boxer. I'm making you grimace. I'm not saying that I'm sorry, but continue. Go on.
I'm not anti-stretch. I'm just anti people wasting time, which is really my concern with it. Because if anyone really looks like actually fully will read a piece of like information I'll put out about stretching, I always will make the little, I put something out today on this and I said something like, if you like to stretch, go on and stretch, like more power to you. Just be aware of like all of what we currently understand in relation to specifically static passive stretching kind of tells us the story of like, yeah, it doesn't really do much to hurt people, you know, unless you bring up a reference to those studies that are like related to people who are already hypermobile and have like osteoarthritic situations, or, you know, you bring up a circumstance similar to like, you know, some studies they do to show like decreased force output in like plyometric activities after holding stretches for like, I don't know, 3+ minutes. It's like, okay, you know, those are more so exceptions to the rule than the rule itself. But what that basically tells you across the board, or what it tells you outside of those particular contexts, the research, is that we don't see improvements in things like delayed onset muscle soreness in terms of the actual fatiguing effects of that. We don't see improvements in recoverability from stretching. We don't see reduction in injury rates. And so those are like all of the main things that people generally, or the reasons that people stretch for. People stretch because they want to generally feel better. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe the reason that they don't feel so good in the first place has nothing to do with the relative amount of length or shortening that you're able to actually create through tissues. Like a lot of the time I've seen people like yourself who decrease the amount of time that they're spending doing their warmups, who completely stop static stretching altogether. And there's no observable difference in any sort of measurable outcome that they're able to, you know, calculate. In their performance or in the way that they feel. If anything, symptoms from that kind of perspective, from a tightness perspective, have, and I've seen this countless times, just improve. And weirdly enough, like, you know, injury rates don't massively spike. Sensation around tightness doesn't massively change. It either stays the same or potentially gets better. And so I just think that, like, overall, instead of looking at, you know, static passive stretching as this thing that is in absolute a good, and because it's traditional is good, we should really just stop to ask ourselves, you know, what are the reasons that we're doing it in the first place? And, you know, whether or not it's supported by, you know, the current research that we have, whether we should continue to do it. And 99.9% of the time, it's no. And most people who are forcing themselves to do 30-minute warm-ups and forcing themselves to do 30 minutes to 60 minutes of stretching a day are really just like your regular, people who are looking to feel better. And so, you know, I tell those people mostly that they just need to improve their exercise selection relative to them, their exercise technique relative to them, as well as just daily movement. I think people sit way too much. I think people don't spend enough time going on walks. I think people spend too much time staring at a screen and sitting on their ass as a consequence. So, you know, basically walking and good exercise is most of what the majority of people need. And anything outside of that, whether it be stretching or foam rolling or any of these other modalities related to relieving tightness, quote unquote tightness, you know, people just kind of need to view those things as extras that may or may not, you know, help them from a cognitive perspective, but certainly as it relates to the current research or the body of evidence that we have, are not empirically supported in the ways that people think that they are.
This episode isn't going to be sponsored by Terragon or anything like that anyway, so we can move. I think it's interesting. Some of your content's very interesting in the sense where it's like eureka moment for people where you see like a Bulgarian split squat, you see the hind leg in that kind of end range. You're talking about stretching your quads, stretching your hip flexors, or even the post you put today as a recording, the people doing the seated reach, and you just kind of juxtapose that with someone just hitting kind of the bottom portion of an RDL. I think more people need to kind of see that and kind of look at it as though, if your training, if your exercise selection is pretty good, your training is pretty solid in terms of how rounded and comprehensive it is, you're probably going to tick all of them boxes anyway. And then maybe it comes down to, like you mentioned, Ben, it's maybe it's more so indicative of lifestyle interventions, where you, like, most people sit down for 8-9 hours a day and stare at computer screens. Would you agree with that concept?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, with any generalization, there are always going to be instances where the generalization can't be applied to a specific context, right? There's not much you're going to be able to do, or, you know, like, imagine telling, you know, someone like Jeff Bezos, who maybe on particular days has to be at his computer for 12 hours straight. Like, imagine telling that guy, Jeff, you really should be walking more instead of like staring at this screen. He would, like, you know, laugh at you and turn the other way. But, you know, most of the contexts that we're looking at in these particular cases are contexts that, you know, this kind of thing does apply to. And funny enough, most of the time, even with clients that I have, because I do work with powerlifters and bodybuilders just through an online setting, like a monthly coaching kind of a thing. And inevitably, whenever, like 99% of the time, when they'll say, you know, my neck has been bothering me more recently, or, you know, my SI joint hasn't felt too good this week, what do you recommend? I don't recommend anything, but the first thing I do ask is, like, what have your average steps been like this week? And again, like 99% of the time, they're like, oh, like, this week has been unusually, like, lazy for me. I've been bedridden, or I've just been, you know, watching too much Netflix or whatever else. So I think it has tremendous, benefit for most people, this whole walking thing. And again, like, I encourage anyone listening to, if they are someone who does a lot of static passive stretching and they're not overly attached to it, to just dedicate all the time that you would to stretching to just walking and, you know, observing the changes there. And, you know, I was reading earlier, going through this book, Joint Structure and Function Now, which is a very, very, it's not, I mean, the original version was published, I think, in the 1980s at some point. Maybe 83 or so, but there have been like 5 new revised versions. It's a legendary book. If anyone is interested in reading it, has a lot of the physics based and the muscle and joint mechanics based stuff that a lot of people have used. But I was reading this book, and there was a section on just joint structure and connective tissue. And specifically, the section I was reading was just diving into the nuances of, like, hyaline cartilage, which is basically, for anyone who doesn't know, the major cartilaginous tissue that surrounds all our synovial joints, which basically serves as a self-lubricating mechanism that, when it's compressed, it actually it actually releases nutrition to the entire joint, to the surrounding bones, so that the surrounding soft tissues, in addition to the bone, can actually achieve or acquire some semblance of nutrition, because the actual cartilaginous tissue in every joint is avascular and doesn't have nerve root and nerve connection. So that's a long-winded way of saying, if you actually want to look at the crux of movement overall, which inevitably is, or are, your synovial joints, you need to look at the tissues that provide nutrition to those joints. And the tissues that provide nutrition to those joints are basically able to provide nutrition only through this compressing, decompressing mechanism, which inevitably brings us back to just general exercise and generalized movement, like walking and taking steps. So hopefully that makes sense. I don't know how we ended up here, but
I'm all for it. And that's isn't that just what this podcast is all about?
Hyaline cartilage.
Hyaline cartilage. I'm going in. Look, you'd be surprised I doubt you're an avid listener of this podcast, but I love the tangents people go on. I'll revert back to Pat Davidson. 20-minute tangents, and
tangents.
I'd be like this, kind of going, that's really interesting. but then I kind of go to the average listener, this is going to be, what the fuck is this guy talking about? But we're all for it. We're talking about exercise selection a little bit, and how important movement is. I see a lot in your social media about the kind of adversarial nature between what's optimal and just lift, and that's a very hot topic at the moment in the kind of fitness industry. again, you mentioned earlier, like, at what level does it become pedantic, and at what level are you kind of just discounting what the ever-evolving evidence of good biomechanics movement and stuff like that? Where do you think we kind of toe the line between, okay, this is useful information, this can be applied, and you're bordering pedantic? Where do you think that line is drawn? And what do you have to say to people that just say, grip it and rip it?
Yeah, so I think this is just one of those things, like everything else, that's like, it doesn't matter until it does. And usually when it matters is when people get to the point where they're in too much pain to exercise, or where they're in too much pain to move outside of exercise, which is, you know, a terrible place to be. I'm sure we've all been there and to varying degrees, but where I draw the line will be different for everyone, right? So I have a few in-person clients who found me through Instagram, actually, funny enough. And so they are kind of coming into those sessions with expectations that are similar to the level of detail or the detail that I would use rather in describing things on Instagram. And so when they come into those sessions, they have questions that normal other people would not, right? So in those particular instances, the amount of nuance that I communicate or use in the actual training session will be relative to what they expect, which is a higher degree, you know, compared to someone who, for instance, like my uncle, started training my uncle, who's in his 50s, who has never lifted in his life. He doesn't give a, can I curse on this?
Of course.
Okay. He doesn't give a fuck about, you know, like where his, you know, iliac gland is. He doesn't give a fuck about what division of his biceps he's doing. He's training with a curl. He just wants to like get in and get it over with and talk about, you know, movies and stuff. He loves to talk about movies, so we talk about movies. So where I draw the line will be different for everyone, and I think where we should draw the line as an industry is nowhere, because it's always going to depend on like who you're having the conversation with in the first place. Obviously, you know, social media, that's the problem with social media, is that you're speaking to everyone, and so consequently you're somewhat speaking to no one. But as it relates to the actual question of like, what do I say to people who are like of this anti-optimal crowd, which, like you said, has, I think the anti-optimal crowd is growing by the numbers. I think mostly that the anti-optimal crowd, like the points that they make are one of a couple. The main point that I hear from these kinds of people, and they differ in terms of their background, there's no, I haven't found any sort of pattern in relation to that. They usually say something along the lines of like, well, you know, most people don't need this level of nuance, so, you know, what's the point of like learning it and trying to apply it? And I give an example of driving when I talk about this and like maps. So let's say I'm going to go to Chipotle, because I love Chipotle. And Chipotle is, you know, X amount of distance north and then X amount of distance east. We'll say it's like 2 miles north, 1 mile east. If I were driving to the Chipotle, would I prefer to, you know, like take the 10-minute drive? We'll just, I don't know if the mileage is going to work out with the timing here, whether that's going to be accurate, but for the sake of the analogy, we'll just roll with it. Am I going to drive the 2 miles north and then the 1 mile east to get to the Chipotle? If there is a road that goes from the point A to the point B between those two points, probably not. I mean, in most cases, I'm probably not going to want to take as much time out of my day to drive to the Chipotle. So I could either take 10 minutes and go north and then east, or I could take 6 to 7 minutes and go northeast on that sort of oblique road, so to speak. Okay. And so you could take both of those routes, and both of those routes would get you to the Chipotle inevitably, or at least hopefully, assuming nothing goes terribly wrong, you know, in either one of those roads. So the point is that the option exists to take the diagonal road, whether or not you take it. And so for most people, this optimal stuff seems unnecessary, feels unnecessary, and it's totally fine if you think that, but just understand that, you know, most people, when they're ignoring particular nuances, are ignoring the diagonal road. They're just pretending that it doesn't exist. And they're saying that, well, at the end of the day, if everyone's going to end up at the same place, like, you know, why does it matter? Well, it matters because you get more out of doing less the more particular that you can be, or the more specific that you can be about whatever your goals are. So there would be no reason for me to not take the diagonal road, as long as I knew that it existed in the first place. But if you don't know that it exists and you haven't seen the outcome of taking the diagonal road, then, you know, it's unimportant to you and it doesn't exist in your head. It only becomes important when you start to lose a ton of accumulated time, or in other ways, accumulate tons of particular stresses that you're not maybe aware of, until they sort of rear their heads in a way that, you know, is not advantageous. So that's kind of a long-winded way of basically saying that, you know, you can get from point A to point B in many different ways, but there will be ways that are more efficient or less efficient. And assuming that someone is going to be spending an hour three times a week in the gym, and you want to make the most out of that session, you know, you're probably better off choosing the options that are more efficient as compared to less efficient, as long as the person doesn't, you know, have a strong preference. If I have a Gen Pop client who thinks of, you know, squats as the answer to everything, then it's like, I don't really care that much. Like, that's a context in which, you know, they're going to do what they like and it's going to improve their adherence. But there are other situations that call for more objective and less emotional solutions, right? So if I'm training the pro bodybuilder, the pro bodybuilder doesn't care about, you know, whether or not they're, you know, what route they're taking. They just want to get to where they're going as fast as they can. So, you know, whether I have them do exercise A or B, from an emotional standpoint to them doesn't matter, but they're just going to want to do the thing that's going to get them to their goal the quickest, that they can get there. So for me personally, it's just a matter of like, who are you working with, and what are the urgency of their goals? And then as a layer deeper to that, like, you know, what level of nuance do I actually need to apply? And in most cases, it's, you know, it's not as much as people probably think. To kind of go back to our earlier conversation and outcomes being very simple, I think that, again, most people have this understanding that the optimal crowd is the same crowd that is like giving their client 10 different cues and trying to educate their client about abduction and these fibers of this muscle. It's like, no one's actually doing that. People are just attacking an argument that doesn't actually exist.
Turning up the sessions with like a protractor and stuff like that and making sure.
Right. Yeah. measuring the 120 degrees of flexion, right, for the lats. And so, you know, the outcomes for me in my sessions are so simple. You would never know that I like know anything about anything. If you were to just watch a session, it's like very boring. It's very simple. These clients just do the movements. I say, hey, you know, I'm going to set you up for this pull down, lean a little bit back, and then just like pull the thing down. Mm-hmm. And 99% of the time it works like a charm because the physics are in a good, you know, we'll say good position relative to that person for that goal. So very, very rambly way of saying two different things. One of which is people are generally attacking an argument that doesn't actually occur in real time. People aren't like pulling out their protractors and doing this stuff. People are just learning more about this to make their outcomes simpler, number one. And then number two, the whole thing about efficiency and just, you know, that being a context dependent thing. But in a majority of cases, again, you don't even really notice. You just kind of are doing the more efficient thing if you're working with a coach who has the ability to dive the layers deeper and then kind of come back out of it and bring themselves back to reality and say, okay, what are the actual simple solutions that I need?
It's a really cool take-home point because if, like you mentioned, Ben, just to kind of close up on that, if you're training that often and you're making the effort, even as a Gen Pop person or even someone who's like a novice trainer, to turn up to the gym 3, 4, 5 hours a week, it might as well be somewhat efficient to a point where you're saving time or increasing your output. You'd think that, wouldn't you? It's kind of crazy. Do you get kind of frustrated when you see the kind of misapplication of training modalities? I cringe sometimes, and again, it's because I'm obviously a bitchy, judgmental man. When I see what are clearly like, I know. Look, if you want to get into power, I'm not going to shit in powerlifting. If you want to get into powerlifting, fine, but you'll see coaches a lot take clients who might have completely contrasting goals or maybe very vague goals and kind of say, okay, I'm going to pigeonhole you now. You're a powerlifter now. You know, it's kind of like, I just want to feel better in my own skin. Well, do you now? Take the slack out of that bar and get that up. Like, does that frustrate you sometimes when you see that occur? I'm not trying to make you bitchy here, Ben. So you can take a second to politicize this question.
I think that it used to frustrate me a lot more than it currently does. But I think what I've ultimately come around to is this, that, and there are times where I slip up still in terms of getting angry at people and getting frustrated when stupid shit is happening around me. Like, no doubt, if you're going to pull out
the memes too.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Memes are great. We could talk about that in a little if you want. For me, it's just come to a point of like, it sounds very, I don't know what the word for it is, but I've gotten to a point where I first tried to identify like who I'm dealing with, because in most cases, I think that most people are in a place where they are either ready or willing to receive information and education, or they're just not. And I don't actually think that there is an in-between. I think that you are either open-minded and willing to change your mind, or you are one of the people who, like many, pretend that they are, but aren't actually open to hearing new information, new ideas, differing opinions. And, you know, no doubt, just like anyone else, I have my biases and my resistances to hearing certain things, but I always try to just understand that is always going to be the case. And I rear it back eventually, and I try to open my mind to new things. But I just think that it comes down to not really trying to fundamentally change people. And so the frustration for me usually came from like wanting people to listen and wanting people to do things that were more efficient and wanting the people to change their minds. And I think I've just gotten away from it because, you know, the more that you're in this industry, especially, the more that you just realize that like, you know, people aren't really going to change for the most part. So if they're not really willing to actually hear out your ideas, you know, on day one, on day 30, they're probably still not going to be able to come around to hearing you out. So I think for me, it's more so come down to like just talking to the people who want to hear me talk and not really talking to the people who don't want to hear me talk. And, you know, that can be difficult to parse out who you're dealing with in an online space. And so that's also why I will be, you know, starting a seminar series soon, you know, just traveling around, talking to people who want to be talked to by me for whatever reason.
That's a big chastising of all of the fixed mindset people out there. If you're not willing to listen, you're not willing to open your mind, just get to stepping, basically.
just get out of the way.
Just go. To kind of simplify it a little bit, because I do want to get into, I think you said you're writing a book at the moment, is that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
You must be a very busy man on the theory side of things anyway, outside of the IT and stuff.
Yeah.
If you were to grab your, we'll call it like some very novice trainer, let's say someone who's training 1 or 2 years, nothing special, if you could grab them by the shoulders and shake them and tell them to avoid, I don't know, let's pick an arbitrary number, 2 or 3 things that, I don't know, the fitness industry propagates as lies or things that are just not well-intentioned and send them the wrong way, is there anything that comes to mind?
Yeah, so there's one main thing. And I'm going to try to stick to the one, because if I do two or more, it's going to be, we'll be here for another hour. The one thing that I would tell my old self and tell a current, or rather my younger self, and tell any sort of current novice trainers, is not to focus on answers, but to focus more on questions. Because I think that the more and more that, you know, the whole social media thing has grown for me, the more people I'm interacting with, which I'm very grateful for, because it's, you know, people are why we live, I think. But I've noticed more and more the common theme of people asking, or rather people looking for answers rather than looking for better questions, right? So what I mean, I'll give an example. So if someone says something along the lines of like, if I do a Q&A, there would be a question of like, how would you best train the sternal pec, right? Or what is the fully stretched position of the sternal pec? There are like probably 10 subtopics that exist within answering that question that need to be understood to actually be able to absorb what the real answer of that question would be. But if I stood here and was talking to someone over video, I could be like, okay, this is the stretch position of the sternal pec. But like, why that's the stretch position of the sternal pec and what the sternal pec actually is, like the information that composes that part of the question is like completely unrelated to the question directly, right? It's a completely separate topic. So people looking and focusing on answers rather than the information that composes the questions, I think is the primary problem with education in the space. Because what people do is they ask questions without realizing that they're using 10 different words that they don't fundamentally understand from the perspective of all the things that underlie it, right? Because, and in the example of just the one I'm using, we'll go with the sternal pec thing. It's like, okay, to know like deeply what the answer to that question is, you have to understand fiber direction. To understand fiber direction, you have to understand muscle architecture. To understand muscle architecture, you have to understand joint mechanics that of the related shoulder joint and how the sternum moves, and not only where the actual particular muscular division is attaching to, but then also how the joint is essentially the kinematics of the joint around which, you know, you're moving that tissue. So there's all the things that underlie that one question that could be another hour long discussion about, like, and of course I could just say the simple answer, like I said, oh, this is the position, but there are so many other things, you know, along that same line of thinking that the person would be able to answer that question on their own if they had the ability just to essentially bring the other things to the surface, right? Because if you know how Bowman arms work, and if you know how muscular torque works, and if you know the mechanics of the joint, then you have the answer to the question. But the answer to the question is in all those things. It's not in the actual words that I'm using to answer the question or show visually what the answer is, if that makes sense.
Makes perfect sense. If the Q&A is of a lot of the people I would follow for that sort of information or anything to go by, I don't think people want to go down any of them rabbit holes or get any sort of depth. The initial answer would have worked.
Yeah, it's like best exercise for pecs, and it's like, oh my god, you know.
That's how you're kind of bite your lip a little bit and kind of go.
Yeah, to be honest, man, like a lot of times I do, like majority of the time I do. But if I'm coming on a podcast to talk about it, I'm gonna vent about it.
Yeah, we're gonna shoot the shit.
Yeah, so that's the I would say that's the short. The short version probably of that answer is basically not to focus on answers, but to focus more just on information. And then comes, you know, 10 other questions about like, well, where do I go to get the information? And it's like, I don't know. Like there's, I don't know.
Plentiful.
Look it up. Look it up.
Google. I don't know. Social media, maybe. Before we start to kind of wrap up, because I've taken a bit of your time, just to talk about your kind of seminars and your book and stuff like that, because that's actually, it would pique a lot of the interest of coaches who listen to this podcast as well, because we do relate a lot of this back to people that are training clients and gen pop and stuff like that. But for the coaches, when did you initially look at, okay, I'm going to put some literature together, or I'm going to start doing seminars, and maybe even some of the more kind of actionable stuff, because there will be people out there that think, do you know what, I fancy myself to maybe start doing a few seminars locally or nationally. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah. So I kind of liken it to, you know, answering the question of like, when should I, like someone will ask, when should I start to create content? Like, I don't feel ready. And I think that the idea of like feeling ready to do anything is kind of just like this illusion and this like tactic that your own brain uses to be able to like delay you actually doing something. So I don't really think there's ever a right time. I just think that like, if you know, if it's something that you really want for yourself, then there's no better time, assuming that you've at least put some amount of effort into accumulating, you know, some amount of information and forming your own original ideas, which, you know, could be a year for someone, could be 5 years for another person. You know, I think most people are well off just like starting to do whatever they're going to do. Like, you're not going to feel ready to to start, you know, writing a book. You're not going to feel ready to start talking in front of people. You're not going to feel ready to start putting a presentation together. Just like start doing it and see where it goes. And the worst that can happen is like you fail and then you move on and you do something else. So for me, it's kind of like that's how the content creation thing started. And that's also how this thing started where, you know, I don't know how many months ago it was, but was like, yeah, I think it would be good to just answer this question that most people have, which is like, where do I start with the biomechanics thing? And I think that a lot of things also work that way where, you know, I didn't ever think about starting to write about anything until people just ask the same question over and over and over again. And I never had a good answer because there's like 1,000 different things you could look at to start to learn biomechanics. So the book will be one that basically answers that question so that I can just send people a link instead of having to explain all that.
explain the process. Sorry.
Yeah.
I was actually kind of wondering, Ben, is it kind of like, obviously it isn't the case with like nonfiction, but do you get some sort of like writer's block where you have to kind of think, what parameters am I setting here for like an introduction to biomechanics? And yeah. have you ever toppled a table with a typewriter on it and just throwing things at the wall?
That's the toughest part, actually, as I was talking to my girlfriend about that recently, is the most difficult thing is trying to be actually concise and to try to give something that, you know, people will benefit from immediately. And obviously, you know, that will be different for everyone, but just trying to figure out what to limit. Because I am calling it biomechanic basics. So it's like, what are the basics? Like, what are the really necessary things to understand? And it's hard to kind of pull out of where I've been for so long, which is just my head just 10 feet deep and all this stuff, to come out and, you know, give it to people that have never learned anything about any of this stuff. So I think whenever I am going through the writing process, and I still am, I just try to think about like, well, something practically applicable here would be I use people who are not into this stuff as like a proxy test for it. Read it to my girlfriend or read it to my mom or read it to my dad and be like, hey, does this make sense? Like, is this English to you?
And they must really love you. Yeah. Can you just take like half an hour out of your day to listen to it? Is it the people at your door? Is it the Jehovah's Witnesses sort of thing? Can I just take a half an hour of your day to talk about moment arms? Thanks for that.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that because I was on the phone with my mom earlier doing our Sunday call catch up as we do. And she was like, so I was talking to her about the book and I was telling her I'm making like sort of final edits on it and everything, or just finishing some, you know, minor sections. And she was like, well, if you want me to read the whole thing and like, you know, go through the edits with you, I will do that. Stop.
You're killing me here.
I know.
If that was a contrast, if I asked a kind of similar question to my mother, I'd be told that she's like an Irish countrywoman. So I don't know if there's much kind of context for that, but it'd be two words. And the first one would start with F and the second one would start with O. Get someone else. Get one of your brothers. What's your public speaking like? Because you're talking about seminars. I want to get to the kind of actionable stuff because even in my area, there will be kind of coaches that would do seminars and stuff like that and go from gym to gym or studios. I think even internationally, Tony Gentlecore was in Dublin, area a few weeks back doing a deadlift seminar or something like that.
Nice.
If you're not really, I don't know if you are, now you can answer the question, but if you're not really adept at like kind of public speaking, or if it's something like, okay, you have the theory, you have obviously the practical stuff from coaching people, but has it been difficult for you kind of putting together stuff where you think, okay, I'm going to have to relay this to a room of people, or is it something you're kind of used to anyway?
So throughout high school, I would always, like the school that I went to would make you present things to the class pretty frequently. And weirdly enough, my college did that as well. So growing up, I was always kind of exposed to having to speak about things that were educationally related to groups of people. And so I guess I was kind of lucky in that regard. And, you know, sports did something similar for me as well for being able to speak to groups. And I never liked it, but I loved the actual, I don't know if this makes sense, but I never liked the actual act of having to speak to a bunch of people. I'd maybe nervous and maybe want to throw up everywhere. But the outcome and like the satisfaction that I would always get from it was like amazing and so relieving in many ways and felt accomplishing. And so the first time that I spoke about any of this stuff to a bigger group of people was last summer, so it would have been last July. I did a I guest spoke at Connor Harris's New York biomechanics seminar. And
Badass.
that was basically Pat also had spoken at that. So it was basically like Connor did the first day and a half, and then I had a segment that was like 2 hours in the early afternoon, and then Pat finished off. And then this year again was the second seminar that I did, but it was the same one that Connor had done the year prior. But this time I basically had half of the second day. So I spoke for like over 4 hours last month. It would have been like basically a month ago from today
Wow.
on this thing. And you know, weirdly enough, 4 hours seemed like a lot, but then as I was actually going through the presentation, it was like I had to just brush over so many different things. So after basically like a month ago, I was like, okay, I want to start doing seminar series. And coincidentally, a few people had reached out to me about like doing something at their gyms. So currently, as it stands, I'm going to release this ebook, and then I'm basically going to try to make a seminar series out of the ebook so that I can take probably 2 days away from everyone, so that they can come hear me speak for 2 days about, you know, all this stuff. And I'm definitely going to start more local. And just kind of see what comes up from it. But it's all going to be like sort of a, you know, in the beginning, a little bit of a new process to me to kind of do it on my own instead of doing it as a guest. But I think having that exposure just gradually in really any realm is necessary. So if anyone really wants to get started with this stuff, it's like I'm, you know, I'm right there with you. But I just feel like it's never going to get any easier if you avoid it. And so the more opportunities that you can kind of take, even if it just means talking to like three friends, like just teaching it to like five people, right? Or even just one person, right? Start there and see how it starts to work out for you. And then gradually, just like, you know, training or anything else, you like increase the magnitude of exposure, the volume of exposure, and you know, you build some muscle. So.
The training, going back to training analogies has pretty much brought that full circle. But I think it's really important as well because biomechanics, for some people, it's kind of like unpalatable almost, especially for the general
Yeah.
public. And like you mentioned, how much you expose them to that, and it needs to kind of be distilled down so that people can understand it, and then use it in their training for their outcomes. You know, that's the end game, really, isn't it?
Yeah. And I want to kind of say that like the way that I see this going from the standpoint of it being like very practically applicable is the book is not going to be something that says it's not going to be like a cookie cutter program that's like, here are all the exercises that you do for all these muscles. It's more like I'm providing the tools. So it's like, here are the basic physics, here are the joint mechanics, here are the joint structure things, here are the structural aspects of all the tissues. I'm going to talk about it not in the context of like setting up a cable curl, right? I'm going to talk about it in the context of itself. And then the seminar series is going to be a lot of like hands-on stuff that's basically like go re like read the book first and then come to the seminar, because at the seminar, the one thing I've learned from the two seminars I've been at is that people are going to check out real fast. So if, you know, if you can basically go over everything in brief and then just get them training as soon as possible, that lends itself to a much better outcome, if you will. And I definitely learned that hands-on from the guys at N1 Education in Colorado. They had a fantastic, you know, seminar set up. So I definitely take an inspiration from Cass and those guys too, to you know, hopefully put something, you know, similar to that on myself at some point.
Adam's pretty funny, isn't he?
Adam is
He's
funny. He's a
cool,
funny
yeah.
guy.
I wanted to do that as well, but the traveling, it's just, especially with COVID and stuff like that, it's kind of crazy. It's
I can't imagine for you, yeah.
Dublin to Colorado is
Bit pricey.
maybe if I did it via Vegas, where I went to Dublin McCarran and then made a little
So
hits,
I'm the
you know,
wrong guy to ask,
kind of
but
like a little bookend. And I'm just thinking about what I can do in Vegas, and then maybe some biomechanics as a bookend. No, just
yeah.
kind of finish off. Where can there's a biomechanics course this weekend. Where can people find you? Where can people digest your content? This is sell, spiel stuff. So
yeah, I mean, just type in my name on Instagram and I'm sure it'll be in the podcast title. So that's pretty much it. I try to keep things very consolidated from the standpoint of finding me, because there's too many accounts out there on too many platforms. So I will have all my stuff just at Ben on Instagram, and then everything else will be funneled through my website, which will be through my Instagram. So even if it's somewhere else, it'll be through Instagram, basically.
Like everything else. Ben, it was an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. Everybody, yeah, Ben, and this is not blowing smoke up your ass, I love your content, because it's, again, there is a little tinge of kind of like, it is kind of adversarial. I've used that word 1,000 times, but I like it because you do have to hook people a little bit as well, you know?
Sure.
Not to go off on a tangent, but I think if you're really kind of bland and matter of fact about things, and maybe that's a downfall of social media a little bit, where you have to kind of hook people, but the stuff you put out is absolutely brilliant, and I think that would probably end up kind of fleshing into your books and your seminars, where it's digestible. There's not a lot of jargon and crap, you know?
Thank you.
I'm trying to compliment you here.
Thank you. No. Everybody,
If you enjoyed this podcast, give it a like, give it a share, and I shall see you all next week. A big thank you to Ben as well.
James, thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.